Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
What's up, everyone? This is your host, Bobby Mason, and welcome back to the Master the Start podcast, episode number 26, presented by GoMahi.com. What an absolute blast it's been halfway through the year, and now we are we're making the turn, and we have some awesome guests coming your way. Today, we have a great episode ahead, and I say that every single week because I genuinely believe every single episode is great. Today, we have Gary Stern on the show. He is an elite distributor. He has the pleasure of leading a team of over 5,000 people in all 50 states. In 7 countries, generating $2 million per year in sales revenue for LifeVantage. He's an established coach, trainer, and mentor for thousands of independent distributors around the world. So settle in, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, or Google Play. Also, please make sure you comment on your thoughts about the show. It could be good, it could be bad. We just want to hear your feedback. Any thoughts whatsoever, it would mean the world to us. Also, one more little tidbit I want to add this week. Follow us on social media. You can find us at Master the Start on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. Our interns are working hard on creating a social platform for you guys to better interact with us. And they're trying to create a whole lot more value for you as you try to work through your week. We want to pull all of these lessons from the podcast and make it easily distributable to you. So take a look at social media and enjoy that content. And most importantly, enjoy this week's episode of Master the Start. Well, like always, Gary, thank you for joining us on the show. We appreciate it. I think we should just hop into who's Gary Stern, what's his background, what have you done in the past? What are you doing now? And then we'll kind of get into things.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Bobby. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be a guest. And you know, who am I? I'm your average guy with an above average desire. How's that? My background, I was a physical therapist for about 6 years, got to work with professional athletes from all over the world. Honestly loved what I did. However, mom and dad both got, my parents were divorced, both got sick with cancer right around the same time. And when my dad passed away, it was kind of a wake up call that I needed to go back and spend some time with my parents or with my mom. And so went back, took care of her, left the field of physical therapy and went into pharmaceutical sales. Still love helping people. Thought that it was about helping people, but realized pretty quickly that really it was about making money. And, you know, at that point, I had the golden handcuffs on. I had the schedule and the income that I needed to be able to take care of my mom, but I didn't like what I was doing. And I stayed that way, honestly, for another 13 years. It was a great profession from a standpoint of for financial reasons and stability at the time. And then some changes occurred, and I watched a bunch of people around me losing their jobs left and right. People that had families, people that, like me, that had a house, they had a family to support, a wife, a kid, or a husband and a kid, or kids. And it was a wake-up call to me that I needed to take a look at something on the side. And so a couple of other friends and myself started a bicycle shop, of all things. Here's a quote for you, a great quote for those that are listening today. As Warren Buffett says, he says, take what you love and make it your hobby, and take what the world likes and make that your business. So take what you love and make it your hobby, take what the world likes or what the world loves and make it your business. Well, the whole world doesn't necessarily love bicycling. And so I should have kept it a hobby. And so that's where I was sitting as of March the 16th, 2011. So it's pretty ironic that, you know, it was right around 8 years ago today that on the 17th, I had heard about a friend of mine had shared with me a little bit about a new company that was coming out. It was in the nutrition, health and wellness space, which was right up my alley, right? Helping people. I understood the health side of things and the benefits. I was able to read some of the clinical studies, jumped in, and literally within 2 years was able to fire my boss in the pharmaceutical world. I've been self-employed for, oh my Lord, 6.5 years now. It's given me an opportunity to travel the world, to build a business that's literally global. I'm sitting down with some friends in England next week who are going to be jumping in the business with me. I've traveled all over the world, traveled to Europe, into Mexico, into Canada, spoken on stage now in front of thousands and thousands of people, all as a result of just saying yes and kind of taking that risk. So that's who I am in a nutshell. What am I working on right now? I'm excited. We're expanding globally, expanding the team. We have over 6,000 people in 10 countries. So it's a big business now. That little thing that I thought wasn't going to pan out so much has turned it. I found what Warren was talking about. I found something that the world loves, and now it's just a matter of getting it out to the rest of them.
That's awesome. So before we get into the business, I want to go back to your golden handcuffs.
Yeah.
Can we dig into the golden handcuffs?
Exactly what I had. Did I use that or did you say that?
You did.
Okay.
Yeah.
They were full on golden handcuffs.
So what are golden handcuffs? And I'm sure so many people can relate to that concept.
Yeah. What I meant by that, Bobby, is, you know, at that point, you know, when I was a couple years into the job, because when it's brand new, it's exciting, right? And I thought, wow, I'm really helping people, and I'm going to go in and I'm going to talk to these doctors and share with them our pharmaceutical products, and I'm going to wow them over with the clinical science, and we're going to help thousands, if not millions, of people. And a few years into it, I realized that wasn't really the case. So what golden handcuffs are was, at that point, I was really pretty good at my job and had almost tripled my income in a matter of 4 or 5 years. So at that point, I'm making so much money that, and I have a house, which includes a mortgage. I'm married, and we chose to have a child right around that time. So my wife, we wanted her to be able to stay home and raise our child for those first 4 or 5 years, not have to go to work, not have to put our son in daycare and have somebody else raise our children. So that's what golden handcuffs were. I was stuck. I couldn't go back into physical therapy at the time and make the same kind of money. And at that rate, I wasn't able to find anything else to replace the income immediately. So I was kind of stuck to doing something that I wasn't happy doing in order to provide for my family and to make an income that would allow us to continue to live the lifestyle that we were living without going back and having to get like 4 or 5 jobs. So that's what I meant by golden handcuffs. And you said something along the lines of, I bet there's a lot of people out there. I'd venture to guess it's over 50%. It's probably closer to 75 or 80% of everybody that's listening to this.
What advice would you give to the people that are experiencing these golden handcuffs? What are tips? What are actionable things they can do to get out of that position? And I know you brought up, you said yes. How do you say yes when there's so much going against you, at least in your mind?
So here would be my biggest piece of advice. And you know, this is, it's going to sound very cliche right up front, but they always say, find something that you're passionate about, right? And the money will come. And I didn't really believe that. In fact, I selected physical therapy, A, because I loved helping people, but B, it was the hottest growing profession when I went to college. So I'm like, okay, that one right there, the one that's at the top of the list, is the one that I'm going to do. They made the best money coming right out of college. They had the best job security. So in this case, I would say do the opposite. Find something that you're passionate about, something that you love. So don't be sidetracked by those golden handcuffs, but find something that you're passionate about, find something that you love, and ask around. Your network is your net worth. That's another good quote for you. Your network is your net worth, meaning people don't realize it, but it's your network that's going to help you find additional opportunities. Ask around. Ask your friends. Say, hey, look, have you looked at doing anything on the side? Look at something where a side gig could potentially become a full-time gig. I think for somebody to just quit what they're doing, if they have all those responsibilities and start something fresh, is going to be very risky, very scary for the average person. But picking up something on the side, right? People do it from Uber and selling things on Amazon and eBay to Airbnb their house. I mean, all of those are side gigs. None of those are going to make you extremely wealthy. Maybe the e-commerce will, but not driving for Uber. I mean, the number of people that make over six figures is very, very few. Same thing with Airbnb. You'd have to have a portfolio of properties to really make it worthwhile. And that's going to take cash and time. On the flip side, find something with a low barrier of entry. Perhaps it's franchising. Perhaps it's network marketing. Perhaps it's going into business with an investor where you're guaranteed to get a specific amount of money for a certain period of time. Or not guaranteed, but it's a low cost of entry, or you're partnered with somebody that can help you from a financial standpoint and bridge that gap. And then it just takes work. That's the thing. Most people who are employees don't realize how much work it is to own your own business, whether you own a business outright or you franchise or gone that network marketing route. Either of those options, it's work. It doesn't happen. You don't get paid unless you're successful in your business. And so I think that's the advice I would give them. A, talk to your friends, talk to your network, see what's working for them. B, explore things that you can do part-time. And as Jim Rohn would say, work full-time on paying your bills and work part-time on building your fortune until your fortune catches up to your bills and you can get rid of that first thing and work full-time not only on paying your bills but also building your fortune at the same time.
And I have a question that piggybacks off of that only because I hear you say need to work hard, right? And yeah, I agree with that. But I also see on your website, you bring up time and financial freedom. And I think people don't necessarily put the two together. They don't see hard work and time and financial freedom being one and the same. But how is it one and the same?
Brilliant question. So it took hard work to get that time and financial freedom. And now I choose to work. That's the difference, is I choose to work when I want, with whom I want, where I want. And that determines the amount of then time and financial freedom I'll have on the back end. So that's how they're tied together. Many people don't understand it. They're going and trading time for money. They don't understand leverage. And I call it residuality or residual income, right? So artists, they understand residual income. Michael Jordan is still making money. I was watching a English Premier League football, i.e. soccer game, and Paris Saint-Germain, PSG, their uniforms have the little Air Jordan logos on them. He's getting paid for a sport that he didn't even play. He was amazing at basketball, and yet his clothing line is supplying the uniforms for an English, they're not English Premier League, my bad. They're in Paris, they're in French League, but you know my drift. So you have to find something that provides leverage and what I call residuality, right? Leverage is leveraged income. It's not just your efforts. You either leverage money, like with real estate, you buy a property, that allows you to start renting it out. As that property pays for itself, you take that money and you reinvest it into the next property. But before you know it, you have 10 places in your portfolio. You're renting each of them out, and maybe you've generated $100,000 to $150,000 a year in rental income, and you own all those properties. You leveraged money to buy more properties. Or you can leverage people, right? You leverage people, meaning it's not just your efforts, but I'd rather have the efforts, 1% of the efforts of 100 men than 100% of the efforts of just one. Because if something happens to just that one, you're kind of going to be screwed. So that's what I mean by leveraging your time. Leveraging money or people. When you do that, that buys you more time, right? If you're just getting paid to trade time for money, then you're kind of going to always be trading time for money, right? As a physical therapist, if I didn't work on a client, I didn't get paid. As a pharmaceutical rep, if I didn't sell a bottle of product, I didn't get paid. It wasn't like it was residual. I was getting paid on the orders that I was getting. But in this, in other businesses, find one that allows you time and financial freedom, meaning I did work 8 years ago. I talked to people 8 years ago in my business. I don't even remember talking to some of them. Some of them are still ordering product 8 years later. Every time that product leaves the factory and gets shipped to their home, they get billed for it. They pay the company because they are satisfied with a product, or maybe it's a service in somebody else's company, and I get paid. It's beautiful. That's what I meant by time and financial freedom. I can go to England like we're going to do next week. And I could be over in England and sit down with new business partners, but still be getting paid on other ones. I could take the entire week off if I wanted to and not talk to anybody. And a check is still going to show up on the 15th of every single month. That's what I mean by time and financial freedom. It took hard work, but I didn't get paid on it once. I continue to get paid on it over and over again. And people need to realize that's an opportunity that's out there for them when they establish a business of one that builds leverage and residuality or residual income.
Love it. I like that a lot. So for all those people that don't actually understand what professional network marketing is, what is it? Because I mean, even me, I'm not super familiar with the term and what exactly is done to get to where you're at.
Brilliant question again. And you know what? I'm gonna start off by what most people call it, right? I don't care. I love it. People ask me all the time, is that a pyramid scheme or is that one of those pyramid things? And I always laugh. I either throw back, oh, you mean like the things in Egypt that they built thousands and thousands of years ago? Or I'll turn around and I'll, you know, if they're really kind of being cynical about it, I'll flip it back at them and go, oh, you mean like the thing that you're involved in, whether you got one boss, a CEO that runs the company, and then there's the C-suite executives, and then there's the top management, the middle management, the lower management, and then the employees. And chances are, maybe you're one of the ones in between, but if you're the employee asking me if I'm involved in one of those things, take a look at the structure of the business you're in, the church you're in, the school you're in, the country you're in. We only have one president, right? I mean, take a look at the structure of any organization and they're pretty much shaped like that. So what is it? It's direct. Think of it as a direct to consumer way of doing sales. This is the best explanation I've given, and I'm going to do it very quickly. Traditional business, you have a product that's being made. They advertise that product in order for wholesalers to pick it up. Wholesalers pick up the product, which means it has to get shipped to them and warehoused. Then the wholesaler starts to advertise it so that retailers know they can buy it from that place and carry it in their store or on their website or what have you. So you have the retailer buying it from the wholesaler. That's another shipping that has to occur to get it from the wholesaler to the retailer. The retailer then is stocking it on their shelves, and it might be there for days, weeks, months, or even years before it sells, right? Every step in that chain, there was shipping costs, warehousing costs, and everybody marked up the product because they're looking to get a profit, right? They have to cover the cost of goods and shipping and warehousing and still try to make a profit on top of that. So you can see where the product just continues to get marked up along the way so that everybody along that chain can make money. There's traditional advertising, marketing, budgets. There's a lot of money that could be spent trying to get consumers to come in and buy it from that specific person. In network marketing, it's dead opposite. The company makes a product. They bring on board independent distributors. We're not employees of the company. We're independent. We own our own businesses. We can sell a little or a lot of product, and we can do that by ourselves or by building a team of people to get the word out about the products. And that way, every time the product sells, it leaves the company, get shipped directly to the consumer, either for free at a cost to the parent company, or the consumer pays for the shipping costs. And half of the money that goes back to the company, let's say it's a $100 product, half of the money goes to the company, and the other half goes to the people that helped connect the consumer to the company. That's what professional network marketing is. That's what network marketing, professionally speaking, many people do it as a hobby and they go out and they sell product to friends and family. I didn't want to be that guy, right? I didn't want to drive around with more products in my trunk and sell it to a handful of people. On the other hand, I built a network. I understood the value of the example I was shown was, you know, think, are we allowed to use pronouns on here like Subway? Can I use their name?
Yeah.
So think Subway, right? Subway, Eat Fresh, right? Think Subway. They have, I don't know, 8,000 or 10,000 franchises, I think, worldwide. So let's say they have 10,000 stores. They didn't go into the very first store. They didn't just go into an area, set up a shop on the street corner and start selling sandwiches. No, no, no. They had a concept. They took that concept and they franchised it out. They said, let's find the most lucrative areas. Let's launch those areas. We have to find real estate. We have to build it out the building so that it looks like the parent company. We have to then turn around and hire management who hires staff who then trains everybody. We have to buy all the food products to get them ready. We have to train everybody how to do the food products. Then we open and start selling sandwiches. Professional network marketing is the same way. I'm finding people who want the opportunity to build this globally with me, whether it's in the US, in my backyard, right down the street, or globally, who want to build it. And they have the opportunity. The first thing they do is they buy the rights to the opportunity to be able to sell the product. Second thing they do is they turn around and they're allowed to start hiring their own team. They have to establish where do they want to build a team. When I say hiring, they're not hiring, but building their own team, recruiting their own team. Third thing they do then is they're using the product so that they can develop their own story or their services and then turn around and sell those products or services to others at that point, to the end user. So them and their team are getting compensated for those efforts. That's where network marketing is done professionally. It's about personal development, about growth, about learning how to run a business, how to do time management, how to speak in front of people, how to really how to lead a group of people. Essentially, it's leadership development at the end of the day. You'll have a lot of folks in your organization that are just networkers, not professionals, but networkers. They're selling a little bit of product to friends and family, and that's awesome. You need those folks just like you need the leaders leading massive organizations like myself and, you know, 200 or 300 other people in our company in particular. Does that help? That was a long answer.
No. That helps a lot. And I have quite a few questions off of it now because I think it's super fun because that means you're an expert in networking, but you're also an expert in marketing. So I'm going to have a question about both of them. So when it comes to networking, whether you're a network marketer or not, networking is enormous. That's pretty much key to your success. What are a few tips to successfully networking?
So one thing I would recommend right off the bat is a book written by a good friend of mine. He happens to be from another company, but he and I become very good friends. He's become a mentor of mine. It's called The Game of Networking. The Game of Networking.
And we'll put it in
and
the show notes.
It's written by a gentleman named Rob Sperry. So it would be the resource that I would recommend to anybody, regardless of being in network marketing or real estate or anything else, any business, right? Doctors and dentists and chiropractors, they need to network nowadays as well. It's all about networking. So number one, pick up that copy of that book. It's phenomenal. Number two, as you're meeting people, give them a reason to remember you, right? Leave an impression on them. Think every time you're meeting somebody, what's your first impression going to be to that person? What are you going to leave them with at the end of the day? What makes you memorable, right? People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So it's about taking a genuine interest in others. So many people think, you know, they think social media is networking and they think they put their picture out there and their information out there and that's doing networking. And it's quite the opposite. You need to do that. But you need to go and look on other people's profiles. What do you have in common with them? If you're a weight loss and you see them looking great, they've lost 35 pounds, comment on their post. Go and make an effort to reach out to them. Ask them, what are you doing? Ask them what's working for you and literally get some common ground going with them. Other things you can do, you can join networking organizations. That's out there. There's professional organizations. I know BNI is one of those. I've looked into those. I have friends that have had tremendous success with it. For me, it didn't fit my schedule, but that doesn't mean it's not something I wouldn't do in the future. But it really comes down to, at the end of the day, taking an active interest in others, getting to know them, getting to know more about them, asking questions, less statements, more questions. That's why these things are weird for me, because you're asking the questions, which is awesome. That's kind of the way it's supposed to go. But I'm used to being on your side of the equation, right? You know, what are your hopes? What are your dreams? What are your desires? What do you want out of life? Are you happy with where you're at? Financially, are you happy with where you're at? How about time off? How about, are you going to have a family one day? Right? Those are the questions that I ask people, and it gets to know them, and it differentiates me. They're not used to being asked those things. They're used to most people coming in and giving them a sales pitch, and that's it, walking out the door. And if you take a genuine interest in them and ask some questions, I think that's what the networking is. Last thing I would say about it is document. Make sure you're documenting this as well, because that's critical. It's critical to document, you know, they call it customer relations management. I was trying to think of the name, but you can use your cell phone, and I could put in there, you know, Bobby Mason, host of the podcast, lives in such and such. He's married. He has this many kids, you know, whatever it is. And I don't know enough about you yet. You've been the one that's gotten to ask the questions. But that's what I do as I meet people, is I put notes in my phone so that I remember more about them. So the next time I reach out to them, hey, you were supposed to be having, friend of mine just had surgery a few days ago. I reached out to her. She was blown away. She's like, oh my gosh, thank you for remembering. I'm like, yeah, that's a big deal. How'd it go? How are you feeling? How's the recovery coming so far? Is there anything I can do to help you? That's taking it. It's being intentional in your actions and making sure that you're documenting it as well.
That's really good advice. And I need to do a better job personally of doing that with how many people talk to. I need a document. Getting into the marketing side of things. Now, you have to be pretty darn good at marketing too. So do you primarily do B2B or B2C? Or a little of both?
Both. Okay. A little bit of both. I had to really think it through, because ultimately B2B, my business partners are also somewhat C's, right? They're customers, they're consumers, they're using our product line. They're just sharing it with others and getting paid to do so. Whereas consumers, straight up consumers, do not get paid but use the products and get them at a reduced rate as well. So I do both, and I let the consumer determine that. I think that's one of the reasons why I've had a lot of success with network marketing, is I listen to the consumer's needs. They'll tell you what they want or what their interests are. And if not, I'll ask questions. Hey, what are you most interested in? Are you most interested in the health benefits from the products or the financial benefits that you could derive from doing the business with us? And a lot of times they'll say both. Perfect. That's the person I'm looking for to become that B2B, that business partner. On the flip side, some people are like, look, I don't have time. I don't have the money. They legitimately just don't. They're not interested whatsoever in the business, but they definitely want to improve their health in our case. Where you've got a service, they definitely want to utilize your service. I mean, I'm a consumer in a few other network marketing companies. I do not do their business. I only do one business. But I might utilize multiple products or services along the way. So I'd say that it's both.
So what are your favorite marketing strategies? What do you think really works in today's day and age?
Well, I love social media. I love social media. And here's what I love about it. Creating curiosity. Not a sale. The world we live in nowadays, it's not a sales pitch. Like, a commercial comes on the television, you fast forward through it. Or if you're watching it live, you even pause it, you go to the bathroom, you go get something to eat, you come back and you fast forward it. You don't even watch commercials. You don't read the advertisements in magazines, and nobody really, quite frankly, reads a paper newspaper anymore. So you drive down the road, you don't even give the billboards a second glance. So, you know, all these other ads are being tuned out just intuitively by people nowadays. So here's what I love about social media. You can create curiosity. There's a few billion people in the world that are on some form of social media, billions with a B. So you have an unlimited mark. I say unlimited, right? I mean, maybe you've reached out to all 2 billion of them like Mark Zuckerberg has. But for the rest of us, it's going to take a lifetime to work through all 2 billion of those people. So what you're doing is you're creating curiosity. You're not in their face about it. A prime example was I held up a pill. It happens to be yellow. And I said, hey, if you know what I'm holding in my hand, let me know how the crazy yellow pill has made an impact on your life, how it made you feel. If you don't know what I'm holding in my hand, you need to know. Let's talk. They don't know what it is. The people that are that I even have some people say, okay, I'll bite, right? They take the bait. And they send me a private message, and I can have a conversation with them that way. If it's on my wall, that conversation, it's a sales pitch. If it's a private conversation, I can find out what their needs and their wants and their desires are, and I can have that private conversation. But it got them to come and ask me for more information. I didn't tell them what they need. They asked me for more information. So that's my number one tip, is create curiosity. People all the time want to know, how is it that you're at every single one of your son's events? How is it that you're able to travel? I mean, this year alone, I've been to Colorado twice, South Carolina, Atlanta, and the Bahamas. And that's in the first 2 months of the year. Most people, if they did that their entire year, that would be all their vacation time. They'd be done. So people want to know, how do you do that? I'm glad you asked, Bobby. Let's sit down and talk. When do you have time? Later today or tomorrow? So those are some of the techniques that I use from a marketing standpoint. Also, becoming a product of the products. That's a nickname. Or if it's a service that you use, the company services. You can't go out there and talk about it and not use it. You have to sit there and, you know, you got to use the products themselves. So if I'm talking skincare, I use our skincare products. If I'm talking something for fitness or healthy weight management, I stay fit, right? That's where the hard work. Remember we talked about work earlier? That's where that work comes into play. Because remember, it is all about work that gets you that time and financial freedom. So if you put the work in, not only in the business, but in yourself, developing yourself, getting the skill set that you need, that'll pay off dividends too. So that's some work up front that you get that delayed gratification for indefinitely. Because once you have that skill set, you've got the skill set. People can't take that away.
Very good advice. How do you think, I wanted to bring this up real quick, how do you think professional cycling played a role in your current success?
It played a big role, I would say. That was my story early on, you know, that I was sleeping better within. I mean, my story hasn't changed. I was sleeping better within 2 weeks of using our flagship product. Within 2 weeks, I was feeling better. Within 4 weeks, I was waking up before my alarm clock went off, feeling like I had more energy to just blast through the day. And within 6 weeks, I was breaking records on the bike. Anybody in my cycling circle wanted to know. Like, they all thought instantly that I was juicing, right? That I was doing something I wasn't supposed to be doing. And I'm like, no, it's vitamin P. Our product is called Protandem. So I'm like, no, it's vitamin P. You need to take a look at what I'm working on. When do you have time? Later today or tomorrow? I'll shoot you over a quick video and let's chat. And I'll share my secret with you. So it played a role that way because it kept me really fit. And I joked that I stayed a, you know, even though I wasn't really racing anymore for money, I joked that I stayed a professional cyclist because the stronger and fitter I got on the bike, the more people wanted to know what I was doing, which would allow me to share with them what my product was, which ultimately, if they joined either as a customer or distributor, I'd get paid. And then if they built with me, I would continue to get paid. So theoretically, every time I went on a bike ride, I was looking at it like I was getting paid to go ride my bike. And I would give that advice to every entrepreneur. Say they're in a different company and they're not a professional cyclist, but I'm going to go back to like weight loss. Then go to the gym, watch what you eat, use the company's products, and realize that every time you lose another pound, you're getting paid to lose that pound because people are going to then ask you, what did you do? And you can share with them your product or service. What if it's skincare? Take good care of your skin. Put sunscreen on. Do everything. Wear a hat. Do everything you're supposed to do when you're outside. so that your skin looks good, and realize that by taking care of yourself, you're getting paid to do so because people are going to ask you what you're doing and want to be a part of it.
That is strong advice. I mean, for an entrepreneur or employee, I like that for sure.
And that goes to the marketing piece. It really does, because people then are going to ask, well, what are you doing? And there was a girl that joined my organization at one point, Bobby, and she was, by her words, I believe she was about 70 or 80, but by her words, she was 100 pounds overweight. One of the most beautiful women you'd ever seen in your life, but so like lack of self-confidence because of her weight problem. And I told her that. She didn't take my advice. She did not take my advice because I guess there, she had demons she had to work through to try to overcome. But I told her, you lose not 100, but you lose 60 or 70 pounds and you're done. You'll never have to work another day in your life ever. Because everybody's going to want to know what you did. They're all going to want to do the same thing that you did, which means they're all going to join you in this. And they're going to tell all their girlfriends, and they're going to tell their girlfriends who tell their girlfriends. And before you know it, you'll have built a massive organization all over the world because people related to your story. That's it. You got to develop your story. And it's the same in any business. If your passion is cycling, if it's, I'm looking at my golf clubs in the corner, maybe you own a golf shop, or you want to own a golfing business, or maybe you want to sell backpacks for a living, or maybe you want to make hats, whatever it is, wear it with pride, rock it out, and realize that you're repping that brand 24/7.
So
I professional.
Yeah, definitely. And I know this is a complete left turn, but before we get into our quick every week questions, I wanted to ask, and I don't know if I'm saying this right, but what is nutrigenomics? How do you say it?
Very good, man. All right. Nutrigenomics. You said it spot on.
What is it? I've heard some crazy things about it, and I need to know more.
Well, I know you guys have had some stuff on about biohacking. I think I've seen that on there in the past. So think about it as using nutrition to have nutrition and natural compounds to have an effect on activating your genes or gene expression in your body. So a lot of people are taking all kinds of things, antioxidants, anti-inflammatory, they're taking vitamins, minerals, handfuls of pills that they're taking. When instead you can, and they're taking it to have a direct effect on the body. When instead you can take something or eat something that activates your body, it turns your body on at the DNA level and tells it to do more of what it was supposed to do naturally. Then your body's doing the work. That's what nutrigenomics is, using nutrition and natural compounds to activate genetic expression, to turn the body back on again to do what it was supposed to do. It's brilliant when you think about it.
So what are they trying to do within that industry right now? Because, I mean, I looked at the video with your CEO, I believe, and he was talking about how they're trying to really grow that average age range. And he said, like, he could see it being possible hitting 150 someday. And that just seems crazy.
It seems psycho, and especially if you think about it. So, again, put it all into perspective. If you think about the world we live in right now, on average, people are living into their 70s and 80s. Some live longer, right? There are people that have been into the 110s even. I think the oldest person ever was like 115. But when we think anything like, and I got to be careful about how I say this, but anything in those upper ranges, we start thinking about being more frail, being more ill, in and out of the hospital, to and from doctor's appointments. It's not a quality of life sometimes, right? It's you get the quantity, but the quality isn't there. What we're talking about is quantity and quality, because if you can turn on, one of them is NRF2 activation. If you can turn on your genes to produce more anti-inflammatory and antioxidant enzymes, I'm not talking you're taking antioxidants or anti-inflammatories, you're turning your body's own enzymes on. Your body does the rest of the work. It's way more effective than anything you can ingest otherwise. That allows your body to heal itself. So if our cells are aging and we can turn that down by 40% in 30 days, up to 60 to 70% out at like 6 months, you've slowed that aging process. So you're healthier also. Because, gosh, I got to be careful about how I say it, but 250 to 300 or more different diseases and dysfunctions are a direct result of oxidative stress. That's cellular aging, right? Oxidation in the body. So antioxidants have been the answer, but they barely make a dent in the problem. That's why we still saw people getting sick, right? They get older and they get the diseases of aging. Instead, if you can slow that oxidative stress, slow that cellular aging, imagine what kind of effect you can have on delaying the progression of some of those other problems that people have later on in life.
Jeez, that's crazy. It is mind-blowing.
But think quantity and quality. Don't just think quantity, because if you take people as healthy as they are right this minute and make them live 50 years longer, it's going to be ugly. But imagine a 46-year-old like myself who's 86 but looks and acts 46. That's what we're talking about.
It just doesn't seem like real life.
But then again, back I'm thinking back in Napoleon's days, people were living to 30 or 40, and they would, if you'd have told them they were going to live to 80, they'd have said, absolutely no way.
It's so true. It's so true.
So we're not talking necessarily in the next year or two, but this could be a trend that within the next 50 to 100 years, people's lifespan is increased by 50%, but quality remains the entire time, the entire duration. That's what it's all about.
That's awesome. Well, I've loved the conversation to this point, so we're going to get into the quick fire questions. And we call them quick fire just because we do them every week. They don't have to be quick. We actually like to dig into them a little bit. So every week we have a random question, and I haven't really looked at what your random question is yet, so here we go. What is your version of, in quotes, there's two types of people in this world?
My version of there's two types of people in this world. There's the ones that just think about it and dream about it and wish about it and hope about it. That's one type. And then there's the people that go and make things happen. And I'm the second type.
That's a good answer. That is a good answer to the random cue. Okay, the second question, and these are more important. What skills does a young professional need to have straight out of college?
I think they need the ability to communicate well with others, the ability to network using some of the techniques that we've spoken about already. They need to have built an established network of friends and stay in regular contact with those folks. Other skills, public speaking is helpful. Other things like time management, leadership skills, and a desire to continually improve. Meaning personal development. That's what all that is back there, is just a whole bunch of books. And so I know we're on audio, but you know what I'm showing Bobby is that I've built a library of books over the last 8 years alone, and I wished I would have done that right out of college. See, I got out of college and I was done with books. I thought I was done with learning, but you need a perpetual desire to continue learning indefinitely, I think is extremely crucial as well.
So when you're learning indefinitely, I always think there are a lot of people that will constantly be learning, but they have a hard time actually doing something about what they're learning.
Oh, yeah. No, don't become a perpetual like student and never, ever apply what you learn. You have to take action. You know, you could have desire and you could have knowledge, but, you know, you've heard haven't heard the expression, but that knowledge is power. And that's not true. That's not true, because oftentimes knowledge can be on ice, right? And we want to see ignorance on fire. Ignorance on fire trumps knowledge on ice. The best of both worlds is taking knowledge and applying it. Applied knowledge is power. Knowledge by itself, just having it all up in your brain, that doesn't necessarily make you more powerful. I mean, I've got a friend. She's a doctor. Her husband is working on his fifth master's degree, and he's never really done anything with his life except go to school. He's my age, and he's been going to college since he was 18, and he's in his 40s now. And he's never done anything with it because he just keeps going back and getting degree after degree after degree. He's a really smart dude, but I wouldn't call him he's definitely not a powerful person. He doesn't have a lot to offer because he never goes and applies it. He doesn't go teach others. He doesn't go out there and apply that knowledge to a profession or to going and helping make a difference in the world, he just keeps going back to school, which is extremely selfish. So that's what I mean by that. It's applied knowledge.
So how do you read your books? Like, how do you take notes and how do you apply?
I use, if I do paper books, yeah, I actually highlight them. A lot of times as I'm reading along, if there's specific passages that I really like, I almost take notes into my phone. I know that sounds weird, but you have your phone on you at any given time, right? You don't necessarily can't always carry the book around with you unless you're reading it on Kindle or something like that. The other thing I love is I love books on audio. So that way I can go back and replay them. And there's with Audible, you can actually tag locations in the book. So if there's a quote that you like or a principle, right, or a technique, because remember, techniques there are many, principles there are few. Techniques, they will vary. Principles never do. I'll repeat that. Techniques there are many, principles there are few. Techniques, they will vary. Principles never do. So if you learn a sound principle, mark it down, put it in the notes section of your phone or put it under like book notes, put the name of the book and just like 5 to 10 bullet points about that book. Or if it's on Audible, you can highlight 5 to 10 or more sections and it'll play that little audio clip with your note right next to it. So you can literally go back to that book, open up your notes about that book and have everything that you need right there.
Love it. Okay.
John Maxwell, he's a top leader. He has great advice on how to do it. He actually does it in a paper filing system, and he files it away for things that he wants to kind of remember, things he wants to use again later. I mean, I don't remember exactly the system, but he has a brilliant filing system. Just look up John Maxwell's filing system for recalling information. It's amazing.
I will. And we'll put in the show notes as well. So question number three, What do you believe needs to be sacrificed for success?
At times, everything except your faith and your family. So that's my short answer. So I always say the three F's, faith and family first, right? And I'm not here preaching a specific faith or even what a family unit looks like. It may be you and your dog, right? That's your family. But you cannot sacrifice your faith and you cannot sacrifice your family, although there will be times where they talk about this work-life balance. And I remember going out to go do meetings where I knew there were going to be guests present that could potentially grow the size of my business, right? And who knows where that next rock star is going to come from. I remember there were times when I was leaving my house with my son. He was 5, 6, 7 years old with his arms around my leg and I'm dragging him out the door with me practically. He's bawling and I don't want him to see me. I'm bawling, knowing that I'm leaving him, making a short-term sacrifice for a long-term gain. That was tough stuff, man. That was tough stuff. And I just got done saying, don't sacrifice your family. But I wasn't putting them on the back burner to go build my dreams for me and forget about them. No, no, no. I was building our dreams and daddy had to go do that night. So yeah, you missed me that night. But now look, daddy's there 24/7 for you whenever you need me. The beautiful thing is, and this is what I'll tell the listeners, think about it this way. Don't sacrifice your faith in your family, number one. Number two, most employees looking to make the jump, almost all of them schedule their work first, then their responsibilities, and then their fun stuff, right? Fun stuff with family. I schedule my schedule completely opposite. Schedule the fun stuff first. As a result of making a few sacrifices for a short period of time, short-term sacrifice for long-term gain, I schedule my fun stuff first. Second thing I do then is schedule what my responsibilities are. And the third thing I do is schedule work around that. How would you like to do that? It's up to you how long you're going to make those short-term sacrifices for. I was willing to do it for 3 years and it took me 2.
So the fourth and final question. What is one life hack young professionals should apply this week to either improve their life, become more successful financially, whatever it may be? What is the life hack they can actually take action on this week?
Gosh, it's hard to just narrow it down to one. I bet you have a lot of us who you've interviewed say that. I wouldn't be surprised. I would say number one would be win the morning. W-I-N, win the morning. And by that, I mean, start your day a half an hour earlier. That's a struggle. Start your day 15 minutes earlier. Don't wait till the last minute to wake up and hit the snooze button 42 times and then lay there and look at emails or not even email, go on social media and all that. Like, don't waste that time because you're setting a precedent for the rest of your day. Win the morning, get up a little bit earlier, work out if you haven't been working out. Take that 30 minutes and read. Do some personal development. Meditate if you're the type that needs to meditate, or I said work out already. And or love on your family. Be up early so that you can love on your family early in the morning, right? Before your other responsibilities kick in. By doing that, by winning the morning, you're setting the precedent for the rest of the day. So I think that's the number one life hack that they could do. It might require going to bed 30 minutes earlier so you can wake up 30 minutes earlier, but your productivity isn't going to go up. If you're waking up, you know, if you're awake now for an extra 30 minutes out of a 16 or 18 hours of being awake day, your productivity is not going to go up only like 5 or 10%. Your productivity is going to go up, in my opinion, 50% or more as a result of just winning your mornings. Also, that helps you get your most important items done first. I did that today. I won my morning and I contacted 5 people who wanted more information about my product or opportunity. And I did that before like 9 o'clock this morning. There's times where I would put it off until 1 or 2 and then it just doesn't get done. I might contact 2 or 3 of them. So if you win the morning, that's going to be the number one thing that I could suggest that a young entrepreneur does right away. Win that morning. It's crucial.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Gary, for being on the show. Before I let you go, you have any asks of the audience, ways that they could reach out? You want them to connect in some way, look anything up, whatever it may be.
Absolutely. So, you know, the simplest way would be to go straight to my website. It's GaryStern2.com, GaryStern2.com, the number 2.com.
Seriously, thank you for joining us. It was an absolute pleasure.
Cheers, man. I appreciate it, Bobby. It's been my pleasure. Let's stay in touch.
All right, everyone. Some quick reminders before we let you go. As Gary said, keeping good notes on all of your contacts is essential to building a strong network. Also, this week, this is your big actionable task. Here it is. Win. Win in the morning. Wake up 30 minutes earlier than usual and start the day off right. Work out and or meditate. Maybe you want to do both. Maybe you want to do one or you want to do the other. Then complete your day's most important task before working on anything else. This is huge. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Once again, make sure you subscribe. We are watching you. Have a great week.